See? Every time I should call it every time. Welcome back to my channel. Wendy Renee here. So excited to have you back. This week, Deanna visits our channel, and Deanna is interested in speaking to those who are POMI. If you don't know what a POMI is physically out, mentally in, and POMI looks different for a lot of people. Maybe you know someone who has been inactive or not really acquainted with Jehovah's Witnesses for a long period of time, but mentally they still believe it. Or maybe you know someone, or maybe you yourself are disfellowshipped and you're still kind of struggling with feeling like it is the truth. And if that describes you, this video is for you. So let's go. Thank you so much for liking, subscribing, and sharing our videos. It just shows that with every subscriber, more and more people are realizing that there's health and wellness and joy on the other side of high control religion and narcissistic abuse. Don't forget to hit that bell at the top of your YouTube app. It'll just let you know that we posted another video. And remember, you can always join our little TikTok community where we have interesting conversations in the comments. And I'm also on Instagram where I blog and open up my heart about everything, because that's just very typically me. Deanna, we are so excited to have you. It is an honor to have you come and tell your stories. I'm sure you're an inspiration for women, especially PMOs who are watching this.
So I was a born in, so a former JW, raised in and very, very much believing, even for many years after I was out, which I think sometimes those stories don't get shared as often.
Right.
So I think that's kind of an important group. And a big part of the reason that I did reach out to you, I'm kind of envious in a way of people that say, oh, I always had doubts, or I never really believed it, but went along with it. I didn't have a clue.
It's funny you say that. Yes, because I call it an opportunity now, but I had the opportunity to be POMI when I was disfellowshipped. I still believed that I deserved it. I still believed that this was, I had to get back in. So I'm really grateful for you to touch on this subject. There are a lot of POMIs. Unfortunately, I don't know if POMIs are actually watching this, but I do think that they need to have some attention given to them. So what was that like for you?
What you touched on, that you feel you deserve it. I think that's huge. So I was disfellowshipped, and I would explain it to non-witnesses, those who had never been in, and it horrifies them. They go, wait, what? So you're cut off from all help? Like, when you need it the most, your religion isn't supporting you? And you minimize. I would say, but I knew when I joined, we understand that that's always a consequent. Mm-hmm. And the whole rhetoric that the organization gives us, we repeat back. Well, it's a loving provision. It's discipline. And people are looking at you going, no, it's not. Raised in and kind of that perfect model family when I was young. So elder dad, regular pioneer mom, the kids that everyone thinks, why can't my kids look like that? Perfectly behaved at the meeting.
That was you, huh? I remember you.
Sorry. Yeah. And you wonder, like, none of the other kids really like me. Like, why? Yeah, because they probably come home for a meeting and their moms yell at them. Why can't you be
more like Dana?
And then baptized, let's see, 16, shortly after I turned 16, which still feels young. In witness terms, that you've been getting with the pressure for many years, but then in hindsight as an adult, you go, that is really young to be making a decision like that.
But you're right. Even in the organization, that's old. There's something wrong with you if you're getting to be a teenager and you're not baptized. Did kids your age kind of, were they on guard?
You know, that's funny. There weren't a lot of people my age in my hall, and I knew of them in neighboring halls, but was never in their group. And you feel like that's sort of, I don't know how you would say it. Like, kids are almost wary of, how strong are you? How much can I trust you? You know, if they're wanting to do normal teenage things, but it's, looked at as a double life.
Right.
They're very much on guard. You're baptized already. Like, there's kind of that arm's length, so you're almost like, no, I'm safe. I'm not baptized yet.
I swear I'm safe.
So baptized, and honestly, not in this like fervor of, strong faith or zeal or anything. There was a kid a year older than me in my hall that I heard was getting baptized at that convention. I'm like way more studious and I comment way more than him. He can't get baptized before me. So that's where my heart was.
That's up there with, this girl is not going to get a Bible with her name on it before I get a Bible with my name on it, because that was the gift that we all got when we were getting baptized. And this girl, not getting it before me. Mm-mm. Remember? Yeah. We get a Bible with her name on it and our baptism date. And if you were really elite, you got the songbook with your name on it, the matching leather bound songbook.
the reasoning book bound into the Bible, the personalized?
Girl, I got the reasoning book on the back of the Bible, and it had like the Holy Bible was written. It wasn't even the New World Translation. It said Holy Bible with my name on it. Yeah. Yeah.
Because then it looks more palatable door to door.
Yeah.
You're like, see, it's just the Bible. It's not a weird witness translation at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got baptized and kind of, I don't know, hit a few bumps along the way in high school. Like I actually met a worldly boy that I wanted to date and kind of, yeah, snuck around and hang out with him a little.
You met a boy?
Yes.
No.
I met a boy.
All sorts of scandals going on here.
And here's the sad thing. Again, the hindsight, like how crazy and backwards. He was so sweet. And I had explained, because you like struggle with your guilt, right? Like this is a totally natural desire to date as a teenager. But I shouldn't be. So I explained to him, I'm not supposed to date. I'm a witness, like against my religion, that whole thing. And he felt bad. He's like, so you shouldn't come over. Like, don't, if this is important to you, I totally respect your religious beliefs. And I was the one going, well, no, we can like still hang out. He's like, but I would like to date you and meet your parents. This makes me uncomfortable. Any parent would have been lucky for that to be my first real boyfriend.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. You said speed bumps though. Can I just go there for a minute? Those are normal stages of development. In JW land, you're already up to no good, which is so crazy because those are rites of passage, getting to know members of the opposite sex and figuring things out and establishing relationships. You mentioned the guilt. I remember having crushes on really cute boys, like valedictorian, really good quality boys. And nope, there was something wrong with me because I was attracted to them.
And they could be total scum of the earth, but if they are baptized and keep a good appearance at Kingdom Hall, well, they're desirable. That's who you should really be interested in.
Or if they're an alcoholic at Bethel, all the more so. Give that brother a talk at our next meeting on Sunday. Let's do hospitality with him. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have a job and he can't talk to me, but sure, let's do it. Yay. Swoon.
That cracks me up though. The Sunday hospitality hookups. You're like, oh, he's young and single. We know this family with the young single sister. Make sure they sign up for us.
Yes. Well, see, it's like you go there because he's single, but you don't want to like go there because he's single, because then you look like that single sister who's out for the single guy. Which, what is wrong with that? You're single. But apparently that's frowned upon too. If you were like 18 or 19, it'd be okay for you to be with that like 50, 60 year old single elder. Yeah, that would be okay. He's a fine spiritual man for you.
How did you know? That's a little bit down the line in my story about high school. How do you know?
If we live the same life, listen, ladies, if you had the same experience, please comment and tell us if you were set up with some dude who was way older than you.
Oh yeah. So, okay. The boy, which my mom found out about and I kind of had no choice. Like you need to go to the elders and you say it's a rite of passage. It's funny. Cause of course, what do? You tell your close girlfriends, right? Like, oh my gosh, like guess what? I kissed the boy. And the elders specifically asked, did you tell anyone? Like, does anyone else know? That's a pretty common one. And he said, make sure you go back to the two friends I had in the hall that I told, and you make sure you tell them you ended it and that it wasn't okay and that you've spoken to elders about it. You don't want to stumble them in thinking that behavior is acceptable. So here I have to like go back and be like, yeah, that was wrong of me to have a first kiss with a cute boy that liked me that I liked. And I've repented. God. And I think after all this like guilt and working through it, I was super motivated to do well. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get my act together. So my penitence was, I'll start regular auxiliary penitence.
Oh, now you're ticking the boxes, doing all the right things.
Yes. And home life just got crazy. I don't know if that's like relevant or helpful to kind of paint the picture, but my dad actually got disfellowshipped and my parents divorced. And I don't know if you talk a lot about narcissism on this channel. So do you think it goes hand in hand? Does the organization breed narcissistic parents? Does it attract narcissists? Is it a little of both? I don't know.
A little bit of both, like, for sure. One of the things that I've learned about narcissism too is we're generally not talking about NPD, which is a full-blown diagnosis, but there are narcissistic tendencies. And sometimes even people who are not narcissists can have those traits, especially in the organization or even as parents. A lot of that is mirroring behaviors that are learned. So in the organization, when there are narcissistic elders or, you know, what you described have a, yes, they could breed them, but a lot of times, and they may be narcissists and they may not be, but a lot of times it's mirroring behaviors. It's dysfunctional, but it's normal for people.
That's a really good point. That's a helpful distinction too. For those moments you're like, oh, am I my mother?
Yeah, well, if you have to question it, you're probably not. Most narcissists are like, that's not me. No, that's not me. Like the governing body, can't do anything wrong, no humility. Now, the thing about narcissists is the goal, the conceived goal is to control. Empaths, to understand. So if I'm talking to you and I'm like, make me understand what's going on. Narcissists really want to listen so as to kind of absorb your information. They can mirror it. They can even mimic being an empath. Narcissists are able to hide in high control religion. It just makes sense to us, all the dysfunction. So yeah. Was that the case in your family?
Ooh. Well, yeah. Mom was very controlling. Yeah. And correct and textbook narcissist. And that's eerie to hear you even say that they listen just with the goal of control. Absolutely. Information was weaponized. Love was weaponized. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I would literally scream as a kid or growing up as an adolescent, you don't care what I think or feel. You're not listening to me.
Right.
But yeah, but it could always be used against you if convenient later on down the road. Yeah.
Well, there's also, if you think there are a couple of traits that narcissists use that are classic narcissistic tendencies, you have, for example, triangulation. So triangulation is when you bring another person in to say, and to further their narcissism, but it gives them validation. So for example, in your case, it would be, maybe she'd bring in your father, a trusted friend, or even an elder. Like, do you see, Dina? What I'm saying is true, right? So she'll use the organization, the Bible, the publications as a way to further control. And then she'll get an elder to reinforce that. You're left thinking, oh, okay, I'm the problem. That's how it works. Until you wake up and realize it's all there. It's all right in front of you. Narcissism.
I had graduated high school. 2 weeks later, she moved out. He served her with divorce papers. And that, I mean, she loved that. The whole victim, you know, playing up that dynamic. He served me. He left me. He left Jehovah. You know, she very much enjoyed that. And I had I have two older brothers and one, the smartest one of us three was never baptized.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, left the organization pretty early, but my oldest brother and I were still active at that point. And we still attended the Kingdom Hall that my mom went to. And we made a point just to not sit because it was awkward and everyone knows your business. And so we didn't want to take sides. And she like never forgave us for that. You won't sit with me at the meeting. You're turning this into like a you versus our dad type thing. We don't want to play that game.
Another narcissistic thing is they flip it back right around on them. Like, what is going on with Dina? This is how it reflects on me. So that's how the organization is too. Yes. What is the publisher doing? This makes the organization look bad. Never mind that someone is suffering. Never mind that someone is dealing with trauma. How does this make the organization look? It's never individualized care. So that makes sense. You see the parallels? Yeah. So this brought you into pioneering?
Yes. I got in an argument with her and packed up my vehicle and left. I'm like, I'm not going back there. So what do I do now? Like, I had no plan. And moved in with, you know, a house with young single witness sisters and just went ahead and signed up to pioneer. I needed to distance myself from her. So as far as like toxic mom relationship, that was a great thing to do. Not good in the sense that I made the truth my own and went like, I'm going to really, really do this for me. So drove me further into the organization, but
sure. Were all these other sisters pioneers? And it was this whole
thing.
Sorority of pioneers.
Didn't make my time. Spoiler alert. Failed my first year pioneering and was disfellowshipped in November. So
So this was soon after.
Wendy, the year I regular pioneered, I was in name doing great. And that was like my worst behaved year as a witness ever. I think back a couple years prior, I'm feeling so guilty about the high school crush and I'm trying to make up for it in regular auxiliary and so sincere in it. And then I get the title regular pioneer. And of course you get like, everyone's so proud of you and wants to support you. And I was just, I was partying. I was hanging, like, I went on dates with worldly guys. Like, it was the worst behaved. You think, well, I'm making up for it with all my hours.
Yeah, you're ticking off all the boxes. I mean, we're talking about behaviors that are normal to the human experience, not to the JWs. Yeah. So we're not going to call you bad. No.
Okay.
Nothing about you or your behavior was bad. That's what was installed, and that's what you were told was bad. So of course you think you're falling apart. You think you're going off the deep end, but really you were just a young woman in her early 20s figuring out her life. And that was something we had to reconcile and figure out our way while still heavily indoctrinated about right and wrong. So that's really what was going on with you. But yeah, you're carrying the guilt, installed guilt. You're carrying that into now you're pioneering and you're still trying to be a normal 20 something young woman. And then you're going to get disfellowshipped. Now you're even worse. So you're told. And so then what do they expect? Yes. Now it's a wonder you didn't self-destruct. So talk us through that. So now you're disfellowshipped and you're still believing. What was that like for you?
Yeah. So as you mentioned earlier, you justify it. You tell yourself you brought it upon yourself or you knew what you were getting into. I was in shock, honestly, just absolutely. I had this weird sense of it can't happen to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So as far as I push the envelope, you still don't believe it when it really happens. Ooh, it still upsets me a little bit when you think of the judicial and the things that they say to you. And then when they bring you back in and tell you, mm-hmm. and you're kind of scrambling.
So basically what you're doing there is we gaslighted ourselves that our experience wasn't what it was, nor the feeling. We pushed down the intuition that this is not right. So we continued. And all these years later, my disfellowshipping was in 2005. It wasn't until I started waking up 2 or 3 years ago that I realized, no, you know what? That was wrong. I'm going to feel that. That should never have happened. They should have never said that to me. And that's when I started healing from it. So of course, you probably still felt it years later. Absolutely.
During the judicial, you have elders asking, well, what do you want? Do you want to be a witness? Do you want to make this right with Jehovah? I remember just being so distraught. I kind of said, I don't know what I want. So they throw that back. You know, I come back into the room. They say, you're disfellowshipped. And I'm going, I don't know what to do. I live with witnesses. Like where do I go? Well, you told us you don't know what you want. What? So yeah, very much that you brought this on yourself kind of an attitude. And yeah, you carry that with you. I even had a therapist for a totally separate reason, but I went to one years later and like casually mentioned, like in an offhand manner. Well, and my mom doesn't talk to me, you know, for religious reasons. And she's like, whoa, wait, what? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, yeah, we haven't spoken or, you know, not a text, not an email in years. She was horrified. She was, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I almost laughed. I go, well, it's fine. Like I chose to leave. I said mm-hmm. that. It's fine. She's like, no, mm-hmm. you should mourn that loss. I never went back to her. I didn't like her saying it. I was not ready to address that.
Wow. They programmed you to think you chose that decision by your behavior is how they make you think. You are pretty passionate about the POMI life. So talk about that and why you wanted to draw attention to the POMI mentality.
Yes. I think there are so many out there with the mindset, if anyone has the truth, it's them. I'm just not good enough, or they are still blaming themselves doing that mm-hmm. gaslighting. I like how you say that, gaslighting themselves.
Gaslighting. Definitely. That's also a byproduct of narcissistic abuse is gaslighting yourself even long after the narcissist is no longer in your life. You think to yourself, well, that is me. I'm the problem. I deserve it. And it's all just years. It's just a trauma response. You're just reacting to all the things that you've been told. And these effects, these emotional effects, they last for years, decades. And this is what I say in almost every video for people that are dealing with the trauma of leaving Jehovah's Witnesses or any high control group, or like, if you think of the Jehovah's Witness organization or high control religion as an abusive marriage or as an abusive relationship, you don't, just because you decide to leave or just because you exit, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden everything is fine. Your trauma never truly goes away. It just gets reframed over the years. And so that's what we're doing here. So you're at that point right now where you were disfellowshipped. While you were disfellowshipped, you still believed. Mm-hmm. And so what did the wake-up process then look like for you? How did you unravel that? Did you get reinstated too as a believer?
No. I went to the meeting where they announced me disfellowship, and that was in November. I went to the memorial just a few months later, mm-hmm. and it was such an atrocious experience. I never went back. And I was dating my now husband. He came with me and very much did not want to. I'd never been a witness, no background with it. He goes, that just sounds terrible. Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. But are they going to talk to you? I'm like, they'll talk to you, but they won't. He's like, they can't talk to me, not talk to you. So he goes with me, like, confident that, well, if everyone wants to meet me, they'll have to talk to you first and they'll have to be polite. I'm going, it's not going to go that way. And right. It was so horrendous. We left. He said, I hope you never go back there because I'm not going to, and I don't think you should.
And it was a bad witness basically for him to see that. Yeah, isn't that funny?
It was awful. Oh yeah. Wow. And that could be a whole separate video that some awful comments were made to him. He's a veteran. He's former military. And he wore a full suit, for Pete's sake. Like, how many non-witnesses wear a suit to the memorial? Wow. But he happened to have a military pin on it. Mm-hmm. And a brother that I had pioneered with, him and his wife had been regular pioneers at the same time I was. And he made the most insensitive, just shocking, horrendous comment about my husband's service, about war, whatever. And he took it so well, just he remained composed and stayed respectful. And I just thought, these people are awful. This was his first exposure to, I've known them for years. I'm taking my lashings. I'm accepting their treatment of me.
Yeah.
But seeing a total outsider, how they treated him was, I would like to say that, like, prompted me waking up. It didn't, but it certainly put a bad taste in my mouth enough where I didn't want to go back.
You know, I have a similar experience of being at the memorial while disfellowship. There is nothing like it. In fact, I was sitting on the end because, of course, nobody wanted to catch my disfellowshipping. It's airborne. And so the attendant passed over me and gave the emblems to the person next to me. And so I didn't participate that year in the memorial. And I was like, what? We get home that night. At the time, I lived with my mom, who also was, like, avoiding me. I lived like Rapunzel. Like, I had to lock myself in my tower in my bedroom. It was horrific. But anyway, come to find out, that ministerial servant just thought that, well, if she's disfellowshipped, she doesn't participate, doesn't pass the emblems. Full disclosure, he felt really bad about it, but it was something that I will never forget, is sitting there with, I mean, easily like 250 something people. I'm just sitting there by myself. And these are people that I've known my whole life. Just, I'm there for Jesus. That's really all I know.
That is telling though. Like, okay, you felt bad after the fact, but his instinct was to speak.
Right.
There are completely worldly, you know, Bible studies get invited, relatives get invited. The three-year-old gets to touch the bread and pass it if they're careful, but skip me, the disfellowshipped one.
They skipped me, but you know what? I'm able to tell that story now here with you. So everything just kind of loops around for a reason. I'm a big believer in that. So after the memorial, now you have a really good boyfriend. So talk us through that and what wake up looked like for you.
Again, that didn't quite prompt me waking up, but that did make me go, I'm too hurt. Honestly, these people I felt very close to, they hurt me deeply. So I don't want to expose myself to that. Or, you know, I wanted to just take a beat. I decided, like, there's no rush. You still have in the back of your mind, maybe I'll go back eventually. I know it's the truth.
Right.
But I just needed time and space to heal. And I'm glad I understood that and did that. So yeah, I went back to school. I worked a lot. I focused on my new blossoming relationship. Yeah, sometimes the best thing to do is just wait and not rush to do anything. Let some time go by. I didn't think about it much. There would be the occasional, like, nostalgic moment. And of course you, like, miss your witness friends, but I couldn't study or read, or I just didn't want to. Maybe I knew I was, like, that was kind of a way to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I couldn't call it trauma or grasp that that's what it was, but sensed that there was pain there.
Of course. You had just lost your whole social structure and then you're trying to stay busy to not think about it. Yeah. So of course these things come up afterwards, after the fact, after you realize it.
And I would say it was 8 years after that. Yeah. Wow. Maybe 8 years after, a friend in a similar situation, like, raised in, and she just kind of faded, but she was starting to come across things in the media about CSA and these court cases. And just as, like, a, whoa, like, informational, have you heard of this? Crazy, right? Would share them with me. And I was horrified. And that actually led me to JW Survey. I wanted to read the actual court transcripts. What do they have to say for themselves? Mm-hmm. And just couldn't believe it. I was appalled. And it, crazy even that that was what triggered this. I remember watching the Candace Conti like Dateline. Right. Was that like 2002, 2003? Right. Some. So as a fully indoctrinated believing witness kid, we sat like the family gathered around to watch that.
Really?
We
see, that's
did.
Surprising. No, I'd say I didn't hear about that till years later. And was it with the intention of, do you see what the apostates are saying about us? Is that what the
It was. It was, well, obviously they edited out. They must have cut out his response to that question, or they didn't give him a chance to. Yeah. And as kids, the extent of it was, oh, cool, look, a Kingdom Hall's on the TV. Like we didn't.
Right. Right. We didn't pay any attention to the content at all.
Yeah.
Right.
You honestly do the, oh, like one bad apple. It's a shame that poor congregation has this bad reputation now, just that one individual. So didn't have a clue. But I remembered that sparked some interest in more or less following, okay, what are they up to now? Like very much just current events. I'm keeping informed because you're certainly not thinking I'm going to go reading apostate information. Oh my goodness.
Of course. Right.
Still a naughty word. Yeah.
Right. Information is a naughty word. Yes. Apostate.
Right. Yeah. So it's very funny how you like tell yourself, I'm just keeping abreast of current events. Yeah.
Right.
Then the same friend that had shared that, she would start sending things on the governing body members, which you remember as a witness, that's the number one. If anyone criticizes the governing body, that's like red flag, abort, do not proceed, you know? And so I remember reading that a link she had sent me basically, and I couldn't tell you where it was from, the governing body members not basically saying that they're human, like breaking down kind of their backgrounds and how they got to their positions, which I suppose average witnesses have that information available to them. But having had some space, some distance, I wasn't fully immersed or attending or studying. I approached it with a different set of eyes, I think.
Your indoctrination was unraveling long before you may have even realized it, which is a good thing. So now you're not POMI. It sounds like you're stepping into POMO at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I was intrigued and I wanted more information. So yeah, I think I was ready for it. And then that's, you know, the floodgates open where, hey, you dip your toe in the water and then you just go venture in. And I went to YouTube.
Yes. It's so funny because that's where everybody lands. And here's my question with regard to transitioning from POMI to POMO. Do you think that as you were going to school and as you were working and even though you were disfellowshipped, you were far removed from it, but do you think it still had a hold on you? And I ask this because there are friends of mine that I still talk to regularly who are, in fact, POMI. They've been inactive. Again, it's a classification of people. We give everybody titles, but they've been POMI for years. For example, one friend of mine is disfellowshipped, but her mother wants to see her kids only, and she allows that. She thinks that she's deserving of that because she's disfellowshipped. So our behaviors, when we still believe it, even though we're not really attached to the organization anymore, our behaviors still kind of display that we still are attached. Did you notice that while you were POMI?
Yes. The way that you speak about it, behave towards it. I had a reverence for my Watchtower library. I didn't get rid of it right away, any of it. Then at one point I moved and I opted to get rid of all of it except my reference Bible and my Pioneer School book. You know, little pieces of it would start to go away, but it was, it's chipping away. It wasn't just all at once. You still, you know, and then you maybe start to notice the way you speak about it. You don't use the jargon anymore or say the truth or you know. So your own mentality towards it.
So you lose the loaded language over time. Like you can take the girl out of the cult, but you can't necessarily take the cult out of the girl right away. Right. Is that how it happens?
So
now you're reading stuff about CSA cases and was it a light bulb moment for you?
Well, and that's interesting, especially when you say it's gradual, the doctrine holds on. If you're going to break it into, you know, terms of what it is exactly. Like I wouldn't call myself religious. I didn't attend other churches. If I did, I would still scoff like, oh my goodness, they believe in the Trinity.
Right.
So I'm not a witness, and especially the CSA, the governing body, or just average guys. I woke up first to the fact that I don't want to be part of that organization, but still never doubted they have the most accurate translation, or Jehovah is God's name, or they, mm-hmm. you know, that came much later once you're really ready to accept, mm-hmm. you know, all of it. But yeah, it was more the people, the organization first, mm-hmm. and later it all comes unraveled when you really start getting brave. You're like, all right.
So you adopted the mentality. It sounds like you were like, it's a good organization, just not for me. Like you didn't see anything mm-hmm. wrong with it, but it just wasn't for you, despite yep. all of the hurt that you had experienced. It sounds yes. like you still weren't really awakened.
Yeah.
To the yep. abuse that you suffered, right? You're still defending yeah. like Stockholm syndrome, right? You're still defending the person who kidnapped you. Right. That's what happens to us until we wake yeah. up to it. What was that moment like for you?
This is a cult moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. I know we all have that moment like, oh my gosh, it's a cult. What am I going to do? Yeah. I'm curious what it looks like for somebody yeah. who was born and raised but wasn't actually practicing to wake mm-hmm. up to the fact that it's a cult, what that's like.
I was reading a work of fiction. A friend lent me a book. I was on maternity leave and... It's about a girl raised in a high control group. If you're not going to read like an actual biography or autobiography of an XJW, like it's a right. safe, you know, it's a non-apostate,
right.
but holy smokes, you can't, the parallels are just undeniable. It's unreal. So the book is called Gated by Amy Christine Parker. You read it and there's the loaded language. There's the us versus them mentality. Mm-hmm. There's the thought stopping phrases and terminology. It would make my heart stop. I would stop. I'd reread paragraphs. I'd take a picture of it, send it to my faded friend and go, is this us? Was this mm-hmm. us? This is mm-hmm. Watchtower.
Let me ask you this. If you knew that book was about Jehovah's Witnesses, would you have read it?
No. See? I hadn't finished it. And I start Googling mm-hmm. the author. Was she a witness?
I get it. Yeah. I recently had a guest who was listening to a podcast about Scientology. And she's like, oh, this is interesting. You know, she was a full-blown JW at the time. And she's like, wait a minute. This sounds oddly familiar. Yeah. And that was part of her waking up too. Same thing. I watch Leah Remini and I'm like under my blankets, like, oh my gosh. Then she's talking about Scientology. So she's not talking about JWs, but really in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no, this is about JWs too. This is all the same. It's all the same.
It's yeah. But seeing that it's not special or unique, I think eliminating that is huge. It fits a mold. And then you look up Stephen Hassan, you look up the Bite model, you look up mm-hmm. hallmarks of a high control group and you go, I didn't deserve that. I didn't bring that upon myself. That is a tactic. That is a control mm-hmm. mechanism.
So all in this moment, everything starts hitting you. I was born and raised in a cult. I should not have been disfellowshipped and I didn't deserve any of that treatment. It must have been extremely emotional.
Yeah. A lot of different emotions. It's empowering, enlightening mm-hmm. in a sense, like, okay, mm-hmm. I can take back this story. Mm-hmm. It's not the narrative they told me that I had always thought it was.
Wow. You can change it. You can change the story. I love that. Because a lot of time the stories we tell ourselves are often based on experiences and exposures and stories that are often passed down to us, but we can change that narrative. I love that. Thank you for that.
And I think you can't address something fully or work through it unless you name it. And so not fearing calling the trauma, trauma. Back to mm-hmm. like the therapist I had seen before I woke up. Right. And I was like, oh, pish posh. My mom not talking to me. That's not a loss. She didn't die. No, it is. You grieve mm-hmm. that. You mourn that. Religious trauma is trauma. Like look it up and be okay with calling it that. And that's okay. Like that's a huge, huge part of processing it. So yeah, the one friend in particular, we would share a lot. I think we were mm-hmm. sort of going through the process together. Like, oh my goodness. And then did you read this? Did you ever think about that? Mm-hmm. And that is very helpful. It's so cathartic to have someone going through the process at the same time. And my husband loves that. He would say this years ago, again, long before the awakening process, he would say, don't identify the way that they label you. He's like, I'll know that you've like really worked past it when you don't identify as a disfellowshipped witness anymore. He's like, why would you even have to like, a, you know, you're like, leper, you like warn people.
Yes. You know, like, yes.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I'll know that they can't hurt you anymore when you don't use their label for you anymore.
It's so simple, but and so poignant. That is something I think that I want a lot of our viewers to get from this message that you're sending here. That you identify yourself, not the organization. Yeah. So what does life look like for you now? So your husband, you got married. You married the guy who experienced the memorial.
Yeah, it's great. He's my best friend. I've got a stepson and we have our biological daughter. We are doing the whole like sports parents, busy with activities, just supporting the kids, spend a lot of time with family, and we've got a really tight knit neighborhood. So all the families nearby have, you know, kids close to the kids' ages, and love my job. I try to write kind of in my spare time. So kind of a, like, therapeutic, cathartic process. I write a lot, journal.
You went through a lot in your 20s in that organization. To be this fellowshipped earlier in your 20s and think you deserved it is not something that is to shake a stick at. That's pretty intense what you went through. And look now, you're triumphant. Despite having gone through that, if you can give a message to the younger version of yourself, to the younger PMO, or to maybe there are POMIs, maybe diving in and watching this, what would your best advice be to someone who is going through that? If you can reflect on that time period, wow. How would you help them?
Big. It's hard to fully grasp or understand that there's gray areas, that life isn't all or nothing, this or that, black or white. Very rarely is anything all this or all that. We have that mentality towards so much in life, not just religion when we're raised in, but if you can just accept that, I mean, it allows you so much grace toward yourself. Coming out of witnesses, maybe, you know, you think, if I read apostate info, I'm wrong, or I'm bad. If I'm disfellowshipped, I'm bad. If I get reinstated, I'm good. Just allow yourself to see more than one thing can be true at the same time. It's not all or nothing. You know, two seemingly contradictory ideas can still coexist, you know, so there's always layers to it. I mean, don't be so quick to label things the way, I mean, that's just how everything was. We made everything in life very much.
We did.
Way.
And our self-worth got wrapped up in it too. Our value got wrapped up in it. Our identity got wrapped up in it. And I think what you went through is it speaks to the trauma in and of itself of, I am no longer one of Jehovah's Witnesses. So what am I?
Anyway,
it's very similar to being a mom. And you think, you know, if I'm not a mom, what am I? Or a lot of people, our personal identity gets wrapped up in that religion. And so when you leave, it's very disorienting. So they make you afraid of the very world that they throw you out into. You know, leave, you don't have an education. You don't have exposure to people. And so that leaves us vulnerable and open to people who very well could be toxic narcissists. Case in point, because that's all we are comfortable with and that's all we know, we are very susceptible to more groupthink and to more abusive people and to people who want to control us because we're moldable and malleable. But when we get our identity wrapped up in being, having, and thinking, that is not what our identity is wrapped up in. It's a conglomeration of all those things. Our identity is you from 20 years ago and you from 10 years ago. That is what our true identity is. And it's always evolving and it's fluid. So I find that to be very interesting that you can always kind of reinvent your identity, and your human experience is something that is never to be discounted, but we were taught that it didn't matter. Right? From dust you are to dust you return, and you are a good for nothing slave, and all of these just repeat horrific twisting of scriptures that is actually thrown at you. So in your experience, how would you give advice to somebody who maybe is in the audience and they're disfellowshipped and they're debating on whether or not to just say, you know what, I'm not going back. I have to live my life. If you could frame that for someone in the audience, what are some steps they could take to do it in a way that can help them through the healing process? Can you speak to that a bit?
I mean, it looks different for every individual. I think what I did was, and hopefully this could help someone, is what do I do now to fill time? I thought of it as I'm just filling time. In my mind, it was from now until whatever it is I go back to being a witness. But that ended up just turning into me living life. So if it helps you to see it as, well, what am I going to do now that I'm not going in service and going to meetings? And you never know where that could take you. I mean, I joined a gym, got a personal trainer who inspired me to go back to school, and my internship took me down a totally different career path, which made me go back to school. I mean, it turns into a beautiful life and experiences that you never could have had otherwise. So if you can just let yourself put that time toward a passion or a goal or a hobby or an interest, just let yourself pursue that a little bit. See what it could turn into.
Love that advice. Yeah. Thank you so much. Honestly, as we've talked about in pre-production, people are actually branching off of this community and they're seeing themselves in each other's story. And a community is a group of people with a shared experience or a shared struggle. So that's what we are here. If somebody wanted to contact you, what would be the best way to contact you?
They could reach out via email, and I'm on Facebook. So that always works too.
We'll put all that in the description box. And that way, if you were in the audience and you want to reach out to Dina, she's opened up the door to you guys. And so we're so thankful.
Don't ever minimize, which is something we've talked about this whole time, is you undermine it or talk it down, water it down, or justify your experience. Every single XJW interview or story or experience that I watched had something so unique and an important takeaway. So I guess everyone needs to kind of own their story and know that it could help others. So you said there's not many that reach out, and we need to get those voices out there and just know that every single one has something valuable to offer to someone else.
Thank you so much. I've had elders who say, I just don't believe it anymore. My story is not juicy. Listen, we're not about juicy stories for views. We're about your story resonates with someone who is listening. That's really all this is about. And when we can share that experience, especially stories like yours, we haven't had a POMI on here. So thank you so much for the experience with a POMI. And even then, giving titles, PME, POMO, like you're a human being who had an experience of being physically out, but mentally in. Thank you so much for coming on here, Dina. I really appreciate having you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching. If you want to reach out to Dina, all of her information is in the description box. If you want to share your story, please email me, wendyrenee@gmail.com, or go to wendyrenee.com and click on share your story and the schedule will pop up. Remember, it's just telling your story that is so important. There are little pieces of all of us in these stories. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.